What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 97, Physeal Injuries of the Elbow with Dr. David Crumbie. Dr. David Crumbie is an orthopedic surgeon for UT Physicians. He is a friend of mine. He's allowed me to come see some surgeries, and you know, we've gone to a couple different things. He comes to work our games on the sidelines. Great guy. Very willing to teach, and so I'm real thankful for Dr. Crumbie and what he's been to our staff here in Pasadena, and just the way he allows people to learn and come and be part of what he's doing. And so it's really helped me out there. But we also have a special guest joining us here on the interview part, so when you get to the interview part, you'll be able to see that. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com is where you can check out any of the information. You can see the YouTube videos that I have linked on there, any of the contact information. We would also like you to find it on iTunes or whichever podcast app you have and rate it. Give me a review. So if you can, just give us a review on wherever you are, a rating, and that'll help other people to find it. And then very soon we're going to be using some Google Hangouts to do the CEUs again. That way we can keep a record and everything will be squared away there. So look for that coming real soon. Should be in September once we start back up with some of our live recordings again in September. And also, of course, I want to thank Bob Marley Memorial Herman for letting us come to the 13th Annual Sports Medicine Update. Can't forget Dr. Josh Yellen and Dr. Mark Knobloch for helping us out with all the questions and interviews and being such a big part of what we're doing here. My coworker Bill Hale for helping out with the interviews. Steven Ramirez, helping me out some of the interviews today. Jasmine Dozal, she's the executive producer for this event. So again, I want to thank all those people, and then Morgan Wilson for allowing us to use some of her music, as well as JJ Worthen. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. I am Jeremy Jackson. You can find me on Twitter at PHS Sports Med. Thanks for joining us.
I'll talk a little bit about the injuries of the elbow and specifically physical injuries. So that puts us in a narrow population down to kiddos a little bit. So last night, as I was doing this talk, about 2 a.m., I became a lot smarter. Yeah. It was about 75 slides, and I figured about 2 a.m., I'll need to slim it down a little bit, so we got it down to about 30. No disclosures. A little early core stretch, but just in case you need to feel free. So what I'm going to try to do today is do a little bit of anatomy, the biomechanics of throwing motion, kind of maybe dispel a rumor about what really is a little leaguer's elbow, and talk about medial and lateral side injuries, as well as give a little small summary of the reaction to that. So, a little bit about the anatomy on the medial side. So, obviously, the big elephant in the room is going to be your UCL. The common ground ligament. And then you have, and that's the anterior band of the medial collateral ligament. And we also, just two more parts to it. There's the posterior band, which is a fan-like structure. And then you have your oblique band. On the lateral side, it doesn't, it's not so much, it's so interesting, but you have your radial collateral and your annular ligament. What's not depicted on the screen is what's the more important ligament on the lateral side is your lateral ulnar ligament, which is disrupted with elbow dislocations. So biomechanics, you guys are all aware of all this stuff, and the most important part is the late cocking and acceleration phase. So as you wind up and start an early cocking, the rotator cuff really is asleep, still on the beach. You start really loading it as more like a spring in the late cocking phase, and then it really kind of explodes forward in your acceleration. So it's important when these injuries occur, first thing I ask is what happened and when did it happen? You know, so if it's when I was just about to come forward, it's probably the most common injury mechanism typically athletes experience. But that makes sense when you look at the EMG studies, looking at the muscle firing patterns in each phase. So The most important part for us is going to be the lateral or the leg cocking and acceleration phase. Now, as we move forward in 2014, there's a lot of theories about injury prevention. Historically, they've always focused on the earlier parts of the biomechanics of the throwing motion. As you probably are aware of, now the focus is on deceleration. Practicing or training, not just with the chain theory of thought with respect to the core, scapation, as well as the prior to the rotator cuff, but also the follow through. So, with deceleration, is probably as violent. It's not loading the spring, but you got to now slow that spring down. So a lot of the early, or the newer prevention programs are focusing on deceleration, such as not letting the ball go and the latter parts of the biomechanic motion. So it's amazing to me, if you look at the, you know, the studies in the lab, that folks don't care if they're elbow or ACL every time we do something. So there's been plenty of studies that look at the torque or the energy created by the throwing motions. And most of the time, in the neighborhood of upper 60 newtons. Okay. Now, if you take your little UCL and plug it into a machine and try to rip it apart from the lab, it only takes about 30 or 40 newtons. So obviously, there's another component to this that, you know, that's just as important. And mainly, it's the dynamic stabilizers like your flexor mass. So for me, when I get someone with something like this coming in, and it's most important to talk to the family as well as the athlete, because oftentimes there's also secondary, let's just say, motivators with respect to practicing, pitching, make sure we look at pitch counts and that type of thing. Most of my focus is not actually on the elbow, it's actually on the core. First thing I do, I want to see how they sit. So usually, and they don't make hits like they used to, but usually it's a slouch kind of posture, you know, showing that, you know, you have the scapula rotating around the torso. That's not related to the elbow per se directly, but what it does is we don't have a good foundation. So we talk about core stabilization, scapula stabilization, proper rotator cuff firing, as well as elbow mechanics and pitching mechanics. So when God built us, he made some built-in safety measures. He knew we were going to go and play baseball and throw too much and throw all year round. You got spring ball, you got winter ball, summer ball, you got AAU, you got all stuff all year round. No one plays any different sports because everybody's going first round. So what your body ends up doing is increasing your carrying angle, which is the loudest moment. You see this often in overhead athletes, even in the early adolescence, you're certainly seeing a little bit different compare side by side. So increasing the carrying angle increases some of the force and torque during the throwing mechanics. You see loss of extension. They can't get all the way straight. Again, a built-in mechanism so that protects our ligaments. And you also see hypertrophy of the pronator flexor mass as well. And that's important as well when we talk to athletes as far as injury prevention. Making sure that we keep our grips good, particularly if they're on breaking pitches and getting down away from the bat. So, a little difference between young and more seasoned overhead athletes would be that as we mature, the ligaments definitely become more vulnerable. Earlier, it's more the growth plate of the bone that's most vulnerable. So really, the ligaments are stronger than the bone in a lot of these kids. And they just pull the bone right off in the majority of these injuries. So, common problem for me is where I see someone come in and they've gone to the ER. And, oh, it's no fracture. And I come in and tell them, yeah, you got a fracture. Mainly because in the elbow, at this age that we're speaking of, these spices look like fractures. Their faces are gaps. There's no bone there. So a lot of times, they're either read as a fracture or not, or there is a fracture, and they're read as negative. Either way, there's certain things that we have to consider at this age group, particularly the secondary ossification centers and when they appear, as well as when they close. So that ties into breaking pitches on the medial side, because guess what? The last one to fuse is the medial side. So this goes not only by age, but also by sex. Now, again, probably around 230-ish, last night, 8 a.m. My wife just poked me on the shoulder, like, are you still up? What are you doing? You got 50 slides. All you got 10 minutes. So, and I'm going at this slide, and I'm showing her, you know, and I'm going through the whole thing, and I'm going through my mind what I might want to say. And make a long story short, she was like, you know, so girls finish first, right? Is that what the slide's about? And I said, yeah, that's kind of what goes on. So you got these secondary application centers, and she's like, yeah. So this is one of the long lists of things that girls finish first, or maybe better, as my wife would put it. So the growth plates, or the growth consideration for girls, is really about 14 versus males about 16. Here too is just showing kind of a depiction or a schematic of the secondary ossification centers around the elbow. Again, the medial side closing last. So what's the Little League's elbow? Well, first of all, it's not just medial epicondyle avulsion fractures. That's how it typically was first described. Now it's like a wastebasket kind of diagnosis. And actually, what we're talking about right now would be considered officially low league of elbow. So there's a lot of different things that's in it. Panner syndrome, which we'll talk about, Panner's disease, what we'll talk about here in a second, is not classically described in this kind of wastebasket, if you will, definition. So as we move forward, I like to separate these injuries to a medial and lateral side. So if you think about the valgus moment during the throwing motion, the medial side is on tension. So on that side, you obviously got the big elephant in the room, which is the UCL, Tommy John ligament. You have irritation of the medial apophysis, and then you can also go ahead and pull that off for avulsion fracture. On the lateral side, of the valgus moment, you're going to be in compression. So again, young cartilage doesn't like to be squeezed or held. So you get Panner syndrome or disease, and you also get osteochondritis desiccans, the OCD of the capitella. Not sure if this is really showing up all that great, but this is a schematic showing that at the throwing motion, the medial side is going to be pulling apart or in tension, versus the lateral side is going to be giving itself a hug here or in compression. So medial side. So just the tension of the constant competitive forces. Again, we're talking about 6 newtons, or 64 greater than 60 newtons, and our ligament is only really built to withstand maybe 30 or 40. You can get irritation or traction on the actual growth plate. So this presents as medial-sided pain, typically not associated with a pop per se. They typically don't want to fully extend their elbow. Doesn't necessarily have any type of neurologic or ulnar nerve irritation, but usually this is in a younger than 10-year-old as well, with decreased accuracy as well as velocity on the throwing motion. This is treated obviously non-surgical. It's more rest, no pitch. No growing. And I have a very low threshold. I don't trust kids. And my own's back there, and he's in that cage back there because of that. But I'll even cast them if I feel like, you know, I can't really trust them. Because as soon as they, you know, well, particularly guys, I know, this is a crummy thing, but, you know, guys turning 25, that night before, guys, go with me on this one. So the night before we turn 25, we get the last 30 points of IQ, right? So, and this age group, it's easy to tell them what to do when they hurt. But a couple of weeks, particularly with the vascularity of the growth plate, a lot of the pain and symptoms go away. Then all of a sudden, I can grow, I can pitch, I can play. So if I don't trust them, I don't trust the parents, what I'll do is put them in a cast. So UCL ruptures, not typically seen in this age group, mainly because the growth plate is weaker than the ligaments, but obviously, again, it's the big, you know, the pink elephant in the room, so to speak. But uncommon in this age group, obviously decreased velocity, control, usually a very acute episode or event of presentation. So pop, ball goes this way, hand continues to go down the biomechanic throwing motion. Most of these are treated with reconstruction. So fractures. So this is probably the most common little leaguer elbow issue that typically we see. It should be noted that the medial side epicondyle fracture is also associated with elbow dislocation. So probably a little higher energy injury. So certainly you need to be aware of that you can have not only medial-sided issues, but also lateral-sided ligamentous issues or bony issues with the dislocation. Sometimes this little piece of bone will actually avulse off as well as duck itself into the joint, and that you actually have to go in and fix and pull it out of the joint. But certainly, this is a common entity, mainly just before it closes. So typically around the 13, 14 in girls, typically around the 15, 16 age group in boys. So definitely in the high school pitcher, overhead athlete population. So treatment, really controversial. For me, I do measure between 3 and 5 millimeters. I say that that's certainly a candidate for fixation. If they're a high demand athlete, such as a pitcher, not just a weekend warrior type of kid, that would probably push me a little bit for surgical fixation. This is a patient of mine. At this time, he was a 16-year-old high school pitcher at Dobie. And you can see a little bit projecting that well, but over here you see a little bit of a fleck off the medial side. It measures roughly about 4 millimeters, but he's a high demand pitcher, so we fix it with a little screw. A lot of compression injuries, again, whether it's the apophysis, the epiphysis, or the cartilage itself, doesn't like to be compressed. So the big two that we need to discern here are going to be Panner's disease or the OCD or osteochondritis dissecans. So with Panner's disease, it's actually the entire capitella. And it goes through phases of necrosis, regeneration, and then recalcification. A little bit younger age group. Obviously, if you have the entire secondary ossification center, you're pretty young still, that's involved. OCD has a lot of support. A little bit older age group. This is where the actual cartilage itself gets irritated. It gets so irritated that it peels off the bone. So you probably are a little bit more common with the OCD in the knee. And the treatments are essentially the same. If they're stable, you can treat it with rest, casting if you don't trust them. You can treat it with surgery if they're unstable. And that's the classification is typically based off of MRI presence. So we see signal underneath the cartilage flap or bone edema underneath the cartilage flap or defect. That typically is considered unstable. You can debride that, you can microfracture it, you can do gloves. A lot of times the little cartilage will break off and the loose pieces need to fish out. Most of this can be done through semi-open or scope type procedure. So here's two x-rays. There won't be a test after this or anything, but I don't know if you can see it, but this is the capitella, the secondary ossification center for the capitella. And this entire involvement, you see this kind of sclerotic, craterous type projection here. And then, of course, the OCD is almost more like a pothole than the particular carpet. So, lateral side of pain, effusion, lack of extension, young kid, rest, panics. Rice. Okay, so rest, immobilization. Probably don't need necessarily compression, but oftentimes some sort of sleeve or some sort of support is not so much a bad idea. And we don't have to really worry about necessarily elevation, but certainly it's self-limiting. We don't typically need to operate on any of this stuff. Sometimes the cartilage will get involved a little bit dinged. More importantly, the whole ossification center does recover after this ends up. OCD lesions, again, classification system based off MRI presentation. So I don't know if you can see it as well, but there's a little signal behind this area here that would constitute an unstable lesion. Again, same kind of presentation, lateral side of pain. You can also get mechanical symptoms where they catch a locker with supination, pronation, or flexural extension. Again, the treatments range from scope to breathing, microfracture, oats or plug, or probably plugs into the defect, similar to what you see in the knee. If the piece is big enough, they actually put a little screw in there, and that's what this x-ray is depicting here. So obviously, stop throwing, splint if it's stable, surgery if it's unstable. Here's a picture of a scope. It's giving you a little direction. The radial head is here, and this is a capitel. So stark difference between nice and smooth U-ball versus crater, surface of the moon. So you may have to open that up with a big lesion and take some plugs and plug that into your defect. So, unlike patterns, which you expect someone to have potentially a full recovery, maybe a little bit of loss of extension, with OCD, a little bit different. They can, the subchondral plate can continue to collapse. You can get angular deformities, early arthritic change, pain with throwing motions. And lots of times, you know, we talk about, you know, as I would put it, take the money, retire. Maybe we're not wanting to proceed with, you know, extreme throwing type of movements. So with the OCD versus the patterns, we're definitely looking at something that has a lot more long-term sequelae. So, conclusion, a lot of the old injuries are related to age. As my wife put it, you know, girls finish first and last thing, so remember that the girl plays a little bit different for girls versus guys. Cartilage and bone are a lot more susceptible the younger we are versus when we get more seasoned, the ligaments become a little bit more in jeopardy. Remember the medial versus lateral side issues. Panthers, the lateral side is definitely the compensation and approach to panthers versus OCD is starkly different. Always tell the family, the moms, the dads, definitely get your own pitch count counter for your kids if you have a pitcher. I think as we move forward, like most things in sports medicine, injury prevention, early surveillance is paramount. What we do want is the kids to be able to enjoy their lives. And if that includes sports, then great. But certainly we want to be on top of things so that we preserve elbow function for their everyday, you know, activities they live in. But certainly if we can get them out and play the field safely, that's what we want to do. So lastly, everyone asks about this. There's a lot of different recommendations out there. I've been here long enough that I certainly get calls from coaches and they don't want their kid coming to me because I'm pretty aggressive with not having them play. So I always give them this, and this is from USA Baseball pitching recommendations. So it goes from the counts to when he's supposed to throw different sorts of pitches, and I highlight that it's not me, it's USA Baseball. Okay. And also, like I said before in the last slide, encourage the families to have their own log of their kids' pitching counts and what happened.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're broadcasting here live at the Memorial Hermann 13th Annual Sports Medicine Update. This is day two. So here we have, I'm Jeremy Jackson, of course. If you listen normally, you know me. Here we have Dr. David Crumby, our orthopedic surgeon that we refer pretty much all of our kids to as long as they'll go. And then we have Miss Leslie Humphrey. She's going to be doing some of the interviews today, so she's jumping in, figuring out how we do this. So Dr. David Crumby, tell us real quick about who you are and what you do.
Well, thanks for the introduction. Thanks for having me. I'm one of the sports medicine physicians with the University of Texas Medical School. Definitely affiliated closely with the Ironman with Maury Hermann. I'm primarily on the southeast side of town with Pasadena and Pearland markets, as you know.
Yep.
Like taking care of kids with sports problems. So that's basically me.
All right. And then you can should be able to see your son over there. It's Trey, right?
Yeah.
Trey. So I think Trey can wave to the camera, say hi.
He's not really shy.
All right, so it's good to have you here, hanging out with your dad. So very cool. I love to bring my son up and hang out with you whenever it's possible. So, all right, so we want to talk to you today. You talked about physeal fractures. Mm-hmm. And I know last year I texted you asking about a physeal fracture because I have a 14-year-old kid coming in, you know, with, like, knee pain. And I really feel that I'm not qualified to test that out. Can you tell me a little bit more about the physeal fractures and what I need to look for, the ages of the kids, and is it something I need to look for in my 3-year-old son when he lands wrong and is hobbling or something like that? So just talk more about that, and then I'll ask you some more about the test or specific things like that. So
okay.
Who are we looking for first?
Well, obviously as kids, you know, it can range from anywhere between, like you're alluding to, 2 and 3 year olds. Now there are certain fractures that are more associated with elbow injury in the younger kids from falls. Really didn't touch on that as far as sports because it's not typically where you see those. Those are higher energy falls. Certainly, there's the subchondral fractures and that type of thing. But mainly what you're looking for is, you know, pain, swelling, inability to move the elbow. That's probably the most common with pain. And that you have to have a high index of suspicion. As far as being a bit uncomfortable with it, you're not alone for sure. A lot of the urgent care guys and don't see, are not used to seeing the x-rays of kids. They're not appreciating how the physis look. So they either look like fractures or they say everything looks good, but there actually is a problem. Sometimes you have a fracture through the cartilage and you can't see it, typically with an x-ray. So it's important to get x-rays on both sides so you can compare the good side that doesn't bother them per se, the uninjured side versus the injury side. And a lot of times that can elucidate a lot of information that we really need to see and that type of thing. Also, I think it's important to include the activity level of the kid and their goals. You know, if they're someone that can stand being in the cast that we can trust versus someone that we can't. And a lot of that conversation has to be with the parents. You know, as well, obviously. But those factors play a big part in what I consider when seeing someone with an injury to their elbow, particularly considering maybe a physio type injury.
All right, so you said the guys in the ER, they're not especially comfortable looking at it as well. So what's something that if I was to take, you know, one of my students or say, hey, you know, there's a possibility you need to go get an x-ray. What's something that I could do to say, you know, how can I communicate that with the x-ray tech or the people there to say, you know, I suspect this. Is there a way that you can, you know, double check it or, you know, do the other side?
In a perfect world, I would love that we got medial side of pain. They do an internal oblique view and all that. A lot of times we get no comparison view and I have to do it myself. And, you know, so again, it's more the high index of suspicion. Identifying that the athlete is in a specific age group where we have a high consideration for a physio injury, have early surveillance basically, you know. So, when you call me, I say send them. You know, I want to find out it's nothing versus kind of think about it. I'm a sleep easier knowing that, you know, there's nothing when there isn't anything there versus kind of wondering kind of deal. So. Commonly, I mean, and I say commonly, I'm being friendly. It's almost every single time that when we have an injury like this in this specific age group, that we're getting additional views or comparison views from the other side or special kind of views that we'll do. And I don't expect the ER per se to really kind of elucidate that out.
All right, so how long after the injury do we have before there's a real problem with the physio? Because I know that you said, when I came to visit you one time at surgery, you were talking about you had to go to the ER right afterwards to go take care of one of the kids because they had a physeal fracture because it has to be done within like 48 hours or something like that. I can't remember specifics. Mm-hmm. How long do you have to deal with that?
It depends on the location. So, certainly you want to reduce or displace physeal injury as soon as possible. It's not a hour issue, but usually within 24 to 48 hours if it's displaced, you know. And it depends on where. Some physical injuries you have a little bit more forgiveness, and others you don't. Certainly around the knee, just definitely the distal femur, you need to get that, you know, it needs to be anatomic. There's a high association with physio injury with injuries to the rib plate there versus in the distal radius or wrist. You're a lot more forgiving, you know. Certainly there's common fractures involving physios in children or adolescents where we don't want to do a reduction if it's longer than 4 days. You know, the studies show that if you reduce then you have more disruption of the growth plate versus leaving it where it is. And just dealing with whatever consequence or sequela that happened from a displaced fracture. You know, and sometimes it's a malunion most of the time, or you have a physio bar where instead of cartilage growing in the growth plate, you have bone actually growing. So then you get angular deformities, and sometimes you have to deal with that. And, you know, the peds guys can, you know, tell you more about kind of what they do with that, but certainly it depends on the physis and that type of thing. The biggest issue from an acute management piece is having a high index of suspicion, identifying that even kids in the 16 can have a physio elbow injury, for example. And if that's the case, then, you know, you shut them down, you ice them up, you splint them, and you send them.
All right, so, again, I told you I don't feel like necessarily qualified because I know, you know, I can do compressions and tap, and I can use the tuning fork to kind of test a fracture, but from what I understand, a lot of that doesn't test the growth plate or, you know, especially through the cartilage, that kind of thing. And in your presentation, you said if there's diffuse pain and there's swelling and tenderness right over that area, that's just one of those things, you know, like you just have to make a judgment call and hope for the best? Or?
Right. It's not anything that we're going to be able to tell right when it happens. But we, again, it's more the high index of suspicion. You know, so we're going to shut you down, we're going to ice you up, and we're going to, you know, get an x-ray, possible MRI, and kind of figure it out. That's really kind of what, you know, particularly elbow injuries are involved in, particularly in throwing athletes. Now, there are other physio injuries, ankle and knee, and, you know, around the wrist, and those type of things that we can have more of a knowledge of. But, you know, as you, I think you saw when you were with me in the clinic, we thought we had a ACL in the kid and a fairly old kid, older kid, 15, 16 years old. What happened was he actually fractured his femur through his growth plate. So with that, you go, oh, wow. You know, so again, they present a lot of times the same fashion as more ligamentous or more commonly ligamentous injuries. And then you get x-ray, you know, and sometimes, you know, I have parents go like, well, don't need MRI, why don't I get x-ray? Well, that's the reason, because we need to make sure there's not a fracture versus, you know, a ligament issue. Right. And a lot of times that changes the whole discussion versus, you know, that kid that was pulling on his leg and they were like, oh, he's got ACL, came in, and oh, I think I tore my ACL. I'm like, ACL's probably fine. You know, it's your bicep, you basically tore your condyle off, you know. So we have to get him to a pediatric orthopedic surgeon to address that issue, and mainly not only just the acute part of it, actually the fracture fixation part, but also any potential surveillance for any problems with the growth plate later on.
Right. I know in your talk you talked about, on top of physio fractures, you talked about OCDs. How often do you feel you see that in athletes younger than 12, and how often do you feel you have to do surgery on those?
Actually, probably more commonly, OCD lesions are treated non-operatively. I think a good surgeon should try not to operate on them.
Right.
Okay. So just having it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Certainly, if they're asymptomatic and I see it, you know, then leave it. The criteria for symptomatic OCD lesions typically alluded to how they present on MRI. So the MRI is a dumb x-ray, if you will. It bases or draws pictures based upon water density. So if I see an area where you have increased signal behind the cartilage flap or in the bone, those are the signs of an unstable lesion, particularly if they're symptomatic. So if they're symptomatic, then you go into maybe what you do about it after that. And even if they have open growth plates still, a lot of times if you just immobilize them and rest them, that will resolve. The pain will resolve. So more from my criteria, particularly in the elbow, is if you have any mechanical symptoms along with being symptomatic, like catching, locking, that type of thing. That usually is from fragmentation of the cartilage, or when that may be just cartilage, or it may be cartilage and bone, depends on the size A lot of times with this, you can put scope into the elbow and clean it up and do maybe a little microfracture. Sometimes if the lesion's big enough, you have to do plugs. So kind of just depends.
I know you spoke about Panner's disease. I know I just started working with middle school athletes, so a little bit younger of the crowd. How do you feel we can properly, like, kind of allude to that or figure out if it's that and if they need to be seen for that?
It's really the x-ray presentation and kind of the history. It's it can happen from acute situation, or it can happen from just kind of repeated, you know, insults such as overuse. So again, paying attention to the pitch counts, paying attention to your kid, you know, saying the elbow hurts, you know, particularly on the lateral side, getting the x-ray when we need to and that type of thing. So you know, it's more just kind of make sure we stay on top of stuff, because if we leave it up to the kids, they'll just play until they absolutely can't.
Do you typically see it in those older than 10, or does it usually stay within the 7 to
10? So I only get those guys that don't read the textbook, you know. So it can definitely present at older, you know, type athletes with respect to physio issues. However, commonly it's probably around the 7, 10-ish kind of age group.
All right, so you talked about casting as an option for OCD or for Panner's?
Both.
For both. And that's just a limit on, and I know that recently we started like putting kids in boots for ankle sprain just because you immobilize them for a day or two, let it kind of calm down. And so, it seems a little scary to cast them, but then at the same time, these are kids. You know, I mean, I have a 3-year-old son, almost 4-year-old son, and getting him to not run or jump or tackle daddy would be impossible. So, I think that's a really cool way to protect them.
Yeah.
So that's good. And, you know, I look forward to learning more from you there. About the pitch counts, I know you said you got it from American Baseball Academy, is that right?
USA.
USA Baseball. So, of course, I could probably go back and look, but when it was saying, I think, 8 to 10 years old was less than 50 pitches per game and 75 pitches per week, something along those lines, is that including practice or is that just per game?
Usually the criteria is just for game, for pitches, and usually pitchers aren't practicing pitching per se in practice per se, you know. So primarily those are game type counts versus, say, absolute throws. There's a lot of sliding scales and recommendations out there. I typically use the kind of the most identified organization, which for baseball typically is the USA Baseball recommendations. It's an advisory committee, is all the names historically through sports medicine and that type of thing, Dr. Andrews and et cetera. So that way it's not coming from me.
Right.
Here it is. I highlight it and do as you will with the information. But certainly it's geared to protect the kids from kind of seeing a lot of these overuse type situations.
Now, I know that last year we had a JV kid, and every game I watched, he pitched or he was the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how bad is that? Cause, I mean, you're throwing the ball every single play if you're a catcher, or every single play if you're a pitcher. And so, I mean, how much does being the catcher on your off days affect?
You know, I don't know if we actually know. No one has a crystal ball. But certainly, you know, I think the bigger issue now that I see, and not just in baseball, but in every sport, is that there's no off season. You know, the neuromuscular firing patterns for, say, baseball and, you know, pitching are going to be different than maybe throwing football. Prior to maybe the last 10, 15 years, you had everyone, you know, good athletes play all sports.
Right.
You know, play football in the fall, you play basketball in the winter, and you transition in the spring to baseball or track or something like that. And summer you played everything, and you know, then we play football again and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Well, now you only play football, and you train, you know, CrossFit or some sort of, you know, sports performance type program in the off season for football, and you play spring football, and summertime you get ready for football, and you don't do a lot of other stuff.
Right.
I think that has produced a lot more of these overuse type injuries, where it used to be rare that you see maybe a Panner's or something like that, but now kids for baseball, you have summer ball, you got winter ball or fall ball, then you got real season with your high school or what have you, then you got you know, all the other stuff that you're going to do with your, you know, your club sports and all that kind of stuff. And then summer ball, you know, it's just all year around doing the same thing. And I think that is where we see a lot more of the overuse type issues, and they're certainly becoming more common.
All right. So give us one big evaluation hint, tip, or what's your, like, go-to, something that I can take away and really put into practice, you know, obviously in August, but for evaluating the elbow injuries.
Really, like I said, it's prevention and early surveillance of having a high index of suspicion for injury. You know, I think where we get out of link with some of the issues would be when you see a 15 or 16 year old male and you're thinking, okay, they're throwing breaking pitches, they're doing all the stuff, and think that they can't have a physical injury. Well, they can't. And that's probably the most common time when you're going to see a medial epicondyle avulsion fracture or something like that. So it's really probably a child less than 17, 18 years old with elbow pain. That's when we need to have a heightened level of suspicion for a physio injury. However, that's the same time that we start seeing a lot of ligamentous injury too. And we're seeing that more and more commonly too. We get younger and younger kids requiring Tommy John type surgical approaches and that type of thing. So the biggest piece is not so much a test so much, but it's really kind of, you know, you guys are on the front lines, you know.
Right.
You guys see, and you know the kids too. So you know when they're hurt versus me, and I'm pushing, and I hurt. It's the, you know, throwing phase, you know, when he had pain, you know, did it come on abruptly or did it come on gradually? Where it is, and you know, kids in the high school age range, you know, I think we need to all have a high index of suspicion of possible physio injury. And a lot of times, the modalities that we're going to use to elucidate the injury versus x-ray versus MRI will also help us with determination of that. And I think that's the bridge we all have to jump over. It's not so much unlike the knee where you can do this test for ACL, what have you, this and that. You can, you know, push here because, oh, you got, you know, meniscus tear or something. The elbow is a little bit different in that, you know, it's really about the mechanism of injury. It's really about, you know, taking in all the information, like what part of the throwing did happen abruptly versus not abruptly, their age, you know, obviously, and also, you know, their gender, you know. Certainly these things happen a little bit sooner in girls versus males. So all those things kind of help paint the picture about what we need to do, where we need to go with it, versus just one big thing per se to do.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah.
it's not anything that's just, all right, well, this is something you can really do. But so, like you said, you got to know the kid, know what they're doing, and if you're in any way suspicious, send them to a great orthopedic surgeon like you. So I know I've told you before, I really appreciate you allowing me to come out and come surgery, because I feel like I learned a lot there. Even just the smell of the burning flesh that makes me queasy and I have to walk out from it. It's just, it's one of those things, and now I can explain that to students. And so I really appreciate everything you're doing for us and helping us, and then helping me grow as a professional. So,
my pleasure, man. Anything I can do.
Let's see, any last questions?
I did have one. Why do you think so many young athletes, you see hypertrophy of the pronator muscles?
Mainly from what they do is their body's way of protecting them from the stresses. So as we talked about the torque involved in throwing motion, you should tear your UCL every time, you know. A lot of the throwing motions, if you measure the activity, if you measure the forces through the joint, you're seeing upwards of 60 plus newtons going through the elbow at any particular time, particularly in that leg cocking as you're loading the spring versus the acceleration where you're letting it go. Now, also the violent part of that throwing motion is stopping your arm from going forward, you know, so that's similarly as violent, so to speak, okay? So the newer focuses from historically, it's all looked at the earlier phases of the throwing as far as prevention, chain theory, core, good strong cores, scapular stabilization, scapation, you know, cuff strength and all that kind of stuff, and grip strength too, pronator, flexor mass strength as well. The newer focuses are directed towards the deceleration phase, where you learn to keep, you know, hold on to the ball, so to speak, to make the deceleration part of that throwing motion less violent. Okay, but specifically answer your question, it's more of just kind of what they're doing, you know, and particularly as you get older, you know, you're getting fancier with your pitches, you're getting a little more savvy with your speed and that type of thing, but you want to, you know, have the ball breaking pitch away or what have you from a hitter, you're doing that with your flexor mass, that type of thing, getting the curve or the rotation on the ball. So that's your body's way of compensating for those violent time periods of high stress. Right. You need to make up about maybe half or double what your structure can actually withstand. So right. UCLs in the lab, at least, tend to be around 30 or 40 newtons before they start tearing. If we're having moments where we have, it was a 60, something else has to be taking the brunt, and that's the bony articulation. That's also the muscles around the elbow absorbing some of that force as well. Yeah. So that's a compensation for the things that they're doing. So not so much pathology as much as your body saying, hey, I'm being smart. You won't stop throwing. I got to beef up here to kind of protect us from, you know, yourself.
All right, so last question, Trey. What are your big plans for you and your dad this summer?
Big
sets. Nice. What kind?
Star Wars.
Nice. We just got into building Legos, so my boy's been building some things. He built a robot, a rescue hero. I don't know.
That's what we're working on now, with the plan to get to what? What are we gonna do next time?
The Death Star.
Yeah.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah, we gotta save up for that one.
Yeah. I went to Toys R Us the other day. Like, oh, we'll just play with all my old Legos. All right. Well, thanks a bunch for being on.
Hey, no problem. And,
again, Jasmine's over there doing the production part, so I want to make sure to say hi to Jasmine. Jasmine knows all. Thanks. All right. Thanks, Dr. Kermit. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, guys.